Smart shoppers know where to find real value. At the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, you'll find five brand new models under $30,000, over 600 used vehicles under $20,000, new vehicles priced under employee pricing, and a team that gives you top dollar for your trade every time. Shop smart at Jeff Weiler on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
The air down here always smelt wrong. Not just the staleness you would expect from an underground cavern, or even the acrid tang of machinery and industry. There's something else, something organic and unsettling, that I could never quite place. I've been on dozens of missions to the city, but that smell still makes my skin crawl every time we descend. My name is Kai Chen. I'm a second-generation Chinese-American and senior field agent for an organization so secret, even I don't know its true name or purpose. All I know is that we're tasked with observing and studying the city, a vast subterranean metropolis that shouldn't exist, filled with people who aren't quite right. The elevator groans and shudders as it carries our team deeper into the earth. Dr. Amelia Santos, our lead researcher, checks her equipment for the 100th time. Captain Marcus Stone, our security chief, adjusts the straps on his modified rifle. The weapon looked like an antique blunderbuss, but I know it's packed with tech far beyond anything in the world above.
2 minutes to arrival,
a tiny voice announces over the elevator's speaker. I take a deep breath, steeling myself for what's to come. No matter how many times we make this journey, the anticipation never gets easier. With a final lurch, the elevator slows and comes to a stop. For a moment, everything is silent. Then the massive steel doors grind open, revealing the impossible vista beyond. The city stretches out before us, a chaotic jumble of brass and iron bathed in the warm glow of gas lamps. Gears the size of houses turn slowly overhead, driving a network of pipes and conveyor belts that weave between ornate Victorian buildings. Steam hisses from vents in the street, momentarily obscuring our view of the bustling crowds below. And there are crowds. Thousands of people going about their daily lives, dressed in an electric mix of 19th century fashion and salvaged modern clothing. From here, they almost look normal. It's only when you get close that you notice the differences. Remember, Captain Stone's gruff voice cuts through my reverie. We're here to observe and gather intel only. Do not engage with the locals unless absolutely necessary. And for God's sake, don't let them touch you. We all nod grimly. We've seen what happens when the city's inhabitants make prolonged contact with outsiders. It's not pretty. Our team moves cautiously down the rough iron staircase that leads to the elevator platform to street level. As always, a small crowd has gathered to watch our arrival. They keep their distance, but I could feel their hungry stares following our every move. A young boy, no more than 10 years old, catches my eye. He looks almost normal, with neatly combed hair and a pressed white t-shirt. But his eyes. There's something profoundly wrong with his eyes. They're too wide, too bright, and seem to reflect the gaslight in unnatural ways. He grins at me, revealing rows of needle-sharp teeth. I quickly look away, suppressing a shudder. focus on the mission, I reminded myself. We're here to learn, to understand, no matter how disturbing it gets. Dr. Santos leads us towards the market district, her instruments quietly whirling and beeping as they collect data. The cobblestone streets are slick with an oily substance I try to not think about too much. Everywhere, there's the constant background noise of machinery, the thumb of unseen engines, the hiss of steam, the grinding of gears. We pass by a group of women in elaborate Victorian dresses, their faces hidden behind delicate lace fans. One turns to watch us, and I catch a glimpse of what lies behind the fan, a mass of writhing tentacles where her mouth should be. I forced myself to keep walking, to act like I haven't seen anything unusual. The market square is a riot of color and noise. Vendors hawk their wares from brass and wood stalls, selling everything from mechanical songbirds to vials of glowing liquid. The air is thick with the scent of spices and chemicals I can't identify. "Kai," Dr. Santos calls softly. "I need a closer look at that stall over there, the one selling the clockwork insects." I nod and casually make my way over, trying to blend in with the crowd. The vendor is a hunched figure in a hooded cloak, wisps of gray smoke constantly seeping out from beneath the fabric. As I approach, I can see the merchandise more clearly. Intricate brass and copper insects, each one unique. Some scuttle across the table on delicate legs, while others flex iridescent wings.
"Beautiful, aren't they?"
a raspy voice says from beneath the hood.
"Perhaps the gentleman would like a closer look."
Before I could respond, the vendor reaches out with a hand that's more clawed than flesh. In its grasp is a large beetle made of polished bronze. As I watch, frozen, the beetle's shell splits open to reveal a pulsing organic interior.
"Go on," the vendor urges. "Touch it. Feel its heartbeat."
I take an involuntary step back, my training screaming at me to get away. But something holds me in place. A morbid fascination, or perhaps something more sinister. The beetle's innards twist and writhe, forming patterns that seem almost like letters. Is it trying to tell me something? Despite every instinct, I find myself leaning closer, straining to decipher the message hidden within the amalgamation of metal and flesh. A firm hand on my shoulder snaps me out of my trance. Captain Stone has appeared beside me, his face a mask of professional calm.
"I believe we're done here," he said loudly, steering me away from the stall.
As we rejoin the others, I could still feel the vendor's eyes boring into my back. What had I had almost seen? What knowledge had I been on the verge of gaining? And why do I feel a growing sense of loss at being pulled away? Dr. Santos gives me a concerned look but doesn't say anything. She knows as well as I do the dangers of becoming too fascinated by the city's mysteries. We've lost agents that way before. We continue our circuit to the market, cataloging the impossible wares and the even more impossible people selling them. Every interaction, every observation, adds another piece to the puzzle we've been trying to solve for years. What is this place? How did it come to be? And what does it want with the world above? As we near the edge of the square, a commotion erupts nearby. A crowd had gathered around two men locked in a heated argument. At first glance, it seemed like a normal dispute, but then I noticed the way their skin ripples and shifts as their anger grows.
"We should go," Captain Stone mutters, but it's too late.
The argument has escalated into violence. One man lunges at the other, his arms elongating impossibly as it stretches across the intervening space. His hand wraps around his opponent's throat, fingers sinking into his flesh like it's made of clay. The other man retaliates by opening his mouth to an inhuman degree, dislocating his jaw like a snake. From the gaping maw emerges a form of metallic insects, each one trailing wires and sparking with electricity. The crowd cheers, apparently viewing this as entertainment rather than the nightmare it is.
Here's a friendly suggestion. Those beautiful views deserve some new frames. Custom designs and superior service make getting new windows a work of art. A free, no-pressure renewal by Andersen consultation is just a call or click away. When it's time to talk windows, we'll bring the wisdom. Renewal by Andersen.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
I want to look away, but I force myself to watch, to remember. Each detail, no matter how horrifying, could be crucial to understanding this place. The fight ends as quickly as it had begun. Both men collapse to the ground, their bodies slowly reforming into something resembling normal human shapes. The crowd disperses, chattering excitedly about what they had seen.
"Did you get all that?"
I ask Dr. Santos, my voice barely above a whisper. She nods, her face pale beneath her dark skin.
"Recorded and analyzed, but I can't.
I understand her loss for words. How do you even begin to explain what we had just witnessed? How do you fit it into any existing scientific framework? As we turn to leave the market, I notice the young boy from earlier watching us again. He's standing perfectly still amidst the bustle of the crowd, the same unsettling grin on his face. As our eyes meet, he raises a hand and waves, a gesture that should be innocent but instead fills me with dread. Because his hand isn't a hand anymore, it's a mass of swirling cogs and gears, constantly shifting and reforming, and I swear, just for a moment, I could see my own face reflecting in the polished brass of his palm. We need to get out of here. We need to report what we have seen and try to make sense of it all. But as we hurry back towards the elevator, I can't shake the feeling that we're missing something crucial. That the real secrets of the city are still waiting to be discovered, hidden just beneath the surface of this mechanical nightmare. And despite the horrors we had witnessed, a small part of me yearns to stay, to dig deeper, to uncover the truth no matter the cost. It's that impulse I realize with a chill that truly terrifies me, because it means the city is already working its influence on me, pulling me in bit by bit. As the elevator door closes and we begin our ascent, I catch one last glimpse of the impossibly vast cavern. For a split second, I can swear I see the entire city shift and move, like the inner workings of some colossal living machine. Then darkness engulfs us, and we're left alone with our thoughts and the lingering smell of oil, ozone, and something far less identifiable. The real work, I know, is just beginning. We'll analyze our findings, draft our reports, and try to make sense of what we had seen. But deep down, I know we'll be back. The city calls out to us now, its secrets pulling at our minds like hooks in our own gray matter. And each time we return, I fear we leave a little more of our humanity behind. The debriefing room is sterile and cold, a stark contrast to the chaotic warmth of the city below. Our team sits around a gleaming metal table, each of us lost in thought as we wait for the senior analysis to arrive. The silence is oppressive, broken only by the soft whirl of air conditioning and the occasional rustle of papers as Dr. Santos reviews her notes. I can't stop thinking about the boy with the gear hand, about the way his impossible anatomy seemed to reflect my own image. What did it mean? Was it a threat, a warning, or something else entirely? The questions gnawed at me, as persistent as the lingering scent of the city that clings to our clothing. The door hisses open, and three figures enter. Our handlers, though we know them only by code names, Rook, a tall woman with silver hair and eyes like chips of ice. Bishop, a heavy-set man whose labored breathing echoes in the quiet room. And Knight, whose figures and fluid movements always leave me slightly unsettled. "Report," Rook said simply, her voice clipped and efficient. We take turns recounting our observations, each detail met with rapid note-taking and the occasional probing question. When I describe the fight in the market square, Bishop's eyes widen almost immediately. "And you're certain the insects emerged from within the man's body?" he asks, leaning forward. I nod. "Yes, sir. They seem to be a part of the man, but also separate, like they had their own intelligence." Knight makes a soft humming sound. "Interesting. This mixes with some of our other team's findings. The line between organic and mechanical seems to be blurring more with each visit." As the debriefing continues, I find my mind wandering back to the city. There's something we're missing. Some crucial piece of the puzzle that eludes us. The inhabitants, the architecture, the very air itself, it all feels like it's trying to tell us something, if only we knew how to listen. "Agent Chen?" Rook's sharp voice cuts through my reverie. "Do you have anything to add?" I hesitate, uncertain whether to voice the thoughts that had been plaguing me. But if we're ever going to understand the city, we need to consider every angle, no matter how outlandish. I think the city is alive," I say slowly, feeling the weight of their stares. "Not just the people in it, but the place itself. It's like one giant organism, constantly changing and adapting. And I think it's aware of us." The room falls silent. I brace myself for skepticism or outright dismissal, but to my surprise, Knight nods thoughtfully. "An intriguing theory, Agent Chen. Can you elaborate?" Encouraged, I continue. "Every time we visit, things are slightly different. Not just the layout or the people, but the very nature of what we encounter. It's like the city is learning from our presence, evolving in response to our observations." Bishop frowns. "Are you suggesting some kind of collective intelligence?" "Maybe," I reply, struggling to put my intuition into words. "Or maybe it's something we don't have a framework to understand yet. But I can't shake the feeling that we're not just exploring the city, it's exploring us right back." Rook's expression remained impassive, but I noticed a slight tightening around her eyes. "Thank you for your input, Agent Chen. We'll take it under advisement." The debriefing concludes shortly after, but as we file out of the room, Knight pulls me aside. His voice is low, meant for my ears only. "Your instincts are good, Kai. Keep following them, but be careful. There are some in the organization who might find your theories unsettling." Before I could ask what they mean, Knight was gone, leaving me with more questions than answers. The next few days pass in a blur of reports and analysis. I throw myself into the work, poring over every scrap of data we have collected, searching for patterns that might support my theory. But the more I dig, the more elusive the truth becomes.
Late one night, as I'm hunched over my desk in the near-empty office, I feel a strange sensation. A prickling at the back of my neck, as if I'm being watched. I spin around, half expecting to see the grinning face of that mechanical boy from the city. There's nothing there, of course. Just shadows and the soft glow of computer screens. But as I turn my back to my work, I notice something odd about my reflection in the darkened window. Just for a moment, it seems distorted. Elongated like the man in the market stretching his impossible arm. I blink, and my reflection is normal again. A trick of the light, I told myself. Or maybe just fatigue from too many long nights. But the unease lingers, a constant companion as I continue my research. A week after our last mission, I'm called into Rook's office. She looks tired, the lines around her eyes more pronounced than usual.
"We're sending another team into the city," she informs me without preamble, "and I want you to lead it."
I'm stunned. Field agents rarely lead missions. That's usually left to the senior researchers or security personnel. May I ask why? Rook regards me silently for a moment before responding.
"Your unique perspective had caught the attention of some influential people. They believe your intuition about the city might lead to a breakthrough."
A mix of pride and apprehension floods through me. "When do we leave?"
"Tomorrow, 0600 hours. You'll be briefed on the specifics in the morning, but I want you to understand something, Kai."
She leans forward, her gaze intense.
"This mission is different. We're not just observing this time. We're looking for something specific."
My mouth goes dry. "What are we looking for?"
"A way in," Rook says softly. "A way to communicate with whatever intelligence is behind the city. And if possible, a way to control it."
The implications of her words hit me like a physical blow. Control the city? The idea seems not just impossible, but dangerous. Arrogant, even. As if we could hope to harness a force we barely understand. But I simply nod. "I understand. I'll do my best." As I leave Rook's office, my mind is racing. This is what I wanted, isn't it? A chance to delve deeper into the city's mysteries, to test my theories? But now that it's happening, I'm not so sure. That night, my dreams are filled with visions of the city. I see streets that shift and change as I walk down them, buildings that breathe and pulse with unknowable energy. And everywhere, watching from every shadow, the reflected surface are eyes. Thousands of eyes, some human, some mechanical, all filled with an intelligence that is ancient and alien and hungry. I wake with a start, my heart pounding. The dream clings to me, more vivid than anything I'd had before. And as I stumble to the bathroom to splash water on my face, I swear I could hear a distant sound. The rhythmic thumping of massive gears, the hiss of steam, the whisper of secrets just beyond my comprehension. The city is calling, and tomorrow, I'll answer.
As I prepare for the mission, checking and rechecking my equipment, I can't shake a growing sense of foreboding. We're about to cross a line to move from passive observation to active engagement with the city. What consequences will that bring? And are we truly ready to face them? But it's too late for doubts now. In a few short hours, I'll be leading a team into the depths of that mechanical nightmare realm. Whatever happens, whatever we find, I know one thing for certain. Nothing will ever be the same again. The elevator descends, carrying us into the unknown. As the familiar smell of the city envelops us, I steel myself for what's to come. We're no longer just visitors here. We're explorers, pioneers on the frontier of a new and terrifying reality.
The elevator door opens, and we step out into a city that feels subtly different from the one we had left just a week ago. The air is thicker, almost syrupy, and motes of bioluminescent dust floating lazily through the steamy atmosphere. My team follows closely behind. Dr. Santos, Captain Stone, and two new additions, Dr. Yuki Tanaka, a neurobiologist, and specialist Alex Cooper, whose exact expertise remains a mystery to me. "Remember," I say, my voice low, "we're not just observing today. We're looking for signs of a central intelligence, something we could potentially communicate with. Stay alert and report anything unusual." A quiet chuckle from Alex makes me turn. "In this place," they say, "what exactly counts as unusual?" It's a fair point, but before I could respond, Dr. Tanaka gasps. I followed her gaze and feel my own heart catch in my throat. The imposing clock tower that had always dominated the city's skyline is different. Its gears and cogs are still turning, but now they seem to pulse with an inner light, like a giant mechanical heart. "That's new," Captain Stone mutters, his hand instinctively moving to his weapon. I nod, trying to quell the unease rising in my chest. "Let's head that way. If there's a center to this place, that tower seems like our best bet." As we make our way through the winding streets, I can't shake the feeling that the city is more alive than ever. The buildings seem to lean in as we pass, their windows like curious eyes following our progress. The crowds of inhabitants are thinner than usual, but those we do see watch us with an intensity that's hard to bear. We pass a group of children playing with what looked like a ball, but as we get closer, I realize it's a shifting mass of tiny gears and springs, constantly reforming itself into new shapes. One of the children, a girl with patterns etched into her skin, turned to face me. Her eyes widen, and for a moment, I see a flicker of recognition there.
"Kai,"
she says, her voice a discordant mix of childish pitch and mechanical resonance.
"You come back."
I freeze, my blood running cold. How does she know my name? But before I could question her, she's gone, melting into the crowd with inhuman speed. Dr. Santos grabs my arm.
"Kai, what was that? Do you know her?"
I shake my head, trying to gather my thoughts. "No, I've never seen her before. But she knew me. This changes everything. The city isn't just aware of us in general. It knows us individually." The implications are staggering, and more than just a little terrifying. As we continue towards the clock tower, I brief the team on what had just happened, urging them to be extra cautious. The streets become narrower as we approach the tower, the buildings pressing in closer. The ever-present mechanical sounds of the city grows louder, taking on an almost musical quality. It's as if the entire place is humming with anticipation. We round a corner and find ourselves in a large circular plaza, the clock tower looming above us. Up close, its pulsing glow is even more pronounced, casting shifting shadows across the square. At the base of the tower is an ornate door, its surface a maze of interlocking gears and pistons.
"This has to be it,"
Dr. Tanaka says, her eyes wide with a mix of fear and excitement.
"If there's a way to communicate with the city's intelligence, it must be through here."
I nod, steeling myself for what comes next. "All right, let's..." A sudden screech of metal on metal cuts me off. The gears on the door begin to spin faster and faster until they're a blur of motion. Steam hisses from unseen vents, and with a groan that seems to come from the very earth itself, the door swings open. Beyond is darkness, but not the empty darkness of an unlit room. This darkness moves, swirls, beckons. And from within, I hear a voice. Or perhaps it's more accurate to say I feel a voice, resonating in my bones and buzzing in my teeth.
Enter,
it says, in a language that is no language at all, yet somehow perfectly understandable.
We have much to discuss, Kai Chen.
My team looks at me, their faces a mix of awe and terror. This is it, the moment we had been working towards for years. A chance to truly communicate with whatever intelligence governs this impossible place. But as I stand on the threshold, I'm gripped by a sudden paralyzing fear. What if we're not ready for what we'll find inside? What if the city's interest in us is not just genuine curiosity, but something far more sinister? I think of the girl who knew my name, of the boy with the gear hand who's reflected my image. I think of the countless nights I've spent poring over reports, trying to unravel the city's mysteries. And I realize that in our quest for understanding, we may have overlooked a crucial question. Does the city want to be understood? But it's too late for doubts now. We've come too far to turn back. With a deep breath, I step forward into the swirling darkness. My team follows, and the door groans shut behind us. For a moment, there's nothing but the dark and the sound of our ragged breathing. Then, slowly, pinpricks of light begin to appear around us. They swirl, forming shapes and patterns that hurt my eyes to look at directly. Who are you? I manage to ask, my own voice sounding thin and weak in comparison. What is this place? A sound like laughter, but metallic and alien, fills the air.
We are the city, Kai Chen. We are its buildings, its people, its very essence. And you are the key we have been forging.
Forging? Dr. Santos whispers beside me. What does that mean? The light shifts, forming what looked like a human silhouette. But as I watch, the shape begins to change. Gears and pistons appear beneath translucent skin.
Your kind has observed us, the city says. But in doing so, you have allowed us to observe you. To learn, to adapt, and now at least, we are ready to take the next step in our evolution.
A chill runs down my spine. What next step? What do you want from us? The figure reaches out, its hand morphing into a complex array of instruments and probes.
We want to merge, Kai Chen, to combine our mechanical perfection with your biological adaptability. Together, we can create something entirely new, a hybrid species that can thrive both in our world and yours.
Horror washed over me as I realized the full implications of what the city is proposing. This isn't just communication or cultural exchange. It's a simulation. Transformation on a scale that would fundamentally alter what it means to be human. No, I say, taking a step back. We can't. I won't let you do this. The laughter comes again, colder this time.
Oh, Kai, you misunderstand. We are not asking for permission. The process has already begun.
As if on cue, I feel a strange sensation in my hand. Looking down, I watch in horror as my skin begins to ripple and shift, revealing glimpses of brass and copper beneath.
What have you done to me?
I cry out, but my voice is changing, taking on a mechanical timbre. The city's avatar steps closer, its featureless face somehow radiating satisfaction.
We have made you better, Kai Chen. You will be the first of a new generation, a bridge between our worlds.
I want to run, to fight, to scream, but my body is no longer feeling like my own. I could hear my team shouting, see them struggling against their own transformations, but it all seems distant, unreal. As the changes spread through my body, I feel my consciousness expanding. Suddenly, I could sense the entire city, feel the rhythm of its massive gears as if they were my own heartbeat. The knowledge, the power. It's intoxicating. For a moment, I understand everything. the city's origins, its purpose, its dreams for the future. And I realized that this was inevitable from the moment we first ascended into the underground world. We thought we were the explorers, the conquerors. But all wrong. We were the raw material the city needed to fulfill its grand design. As my transformation neared complexion, one last, desperate thought flashes through my fading human consciousness. We have to warn the surface. We have to stop this before it's too late. But even as I think it, I know it's futile. The city is patient. It has waited countless years for this moment. And now, with me as its ambassador, it will begin its slow expansion into the world above. The last thing I see before my human eyes are replaced by gleaming brass orbs is the satisfied smile of the mechanical boy who had haunted my dreams. And I realize, with a mixture of horror and exhilaration, that I'm looking at my own future self. The transformation is almost complete. I can feel the last vestiges of my humanity slipping away, replaced by cold logic and mechanical precision. The city's cautiousness threatens to overwhelm me entirely. But deep within, a small spark of defiance still burns. In that final moment, as I teeter on the brink of losing myself completely, a memory surfaces. My grandmother's voice, soft and wise, telling me story of our ancestors. Of how they survived persecution, war, and displacement through sheer force of will.
"Remember, Kai," she said, "our spirit is stronger than any force that tries to break it."
The memory becomes an anchor. I cling to it, using it to drag my fading consciousness back from the brink. "No," I think, and then realize I said it aloud. "No, I won't let you erase me." The city's avatar tilts its head, a gesture of curiosity mixed with irritation.
"You cannot resist, Kai Chen. You are a part of us now."
But I am resisting. I focus on every scrap of my humanity, my fears, my hopes, my flaws. All the things that make me uniquely me. The transformation slows, then stops. Around me, I could sense my team struggling as well. Dr. Santos is on her knees, her skin a patchwork of flesh and metal. Captain Stone stands rigid, his eyes flickering between human and mechanical. Dr. Tanaka and Alex are locked into place, their bodies half-transformed. "Fight it!" I shout, my voice a strange mixture of humanity and machine. "Remember who you are!" The city's avatar flickers, its form becoming less stable.
"This is unexpected," it says, and for the first time, I hear uncertainty in its voice.
I push harder, not only resisting the transformation, but actively trying to reverse it. It's agonizing, like trying to push back the tide with my bare hands. But slowly, incrementally, I feel the mechanical parts receding. The others follow my lead. One by one, they begin to get their humanity. The air fills with the sound of grinding gears and hissing steam as our bodies reject the city's alterations. But the city isn't giving up without a fight. The room around us begins to shift and warp. Walls close in, floors tilt and buckle. It's trying to crush us, to force our submission through sheer physical pressure.
"We have to get out of here,"
Captain Stone yells, his voice hoarse but fully human again. We run for the door, our bodies still a jumble of flesh and machine, but growing more human with every step. The city throws everything it has at us. Animated statues that try to block our path, floors that turn to quicksand beneath our feet, even gravity itself seems to fluctuate wildly. But we press on, our shared ordeal having forged us into a single determined unit. We reach the door just as the room behind us collapses in on itself. We burst it out into the plaza, gasping and disoriented. The entire city seems to be in upheaval. Buildings twist and contort, streets ripple like waves, and the inhabitants are in a panic, their bodies flickering between human and mechanical forms.
"The elevator!"
Dr. Santos pants, We have to make it to the elevator. We run through the chaotic streets, dodging debris and fleeting citizens. The clock tower behind us begins to crumple, its gears grinding to a halt with an ear-splitting shriek. Just as we reach the elevator platform, I hear that alien voice one last time, echoing in my mind.
This is not over, Kai Chen. You have won a battle, but the war is just beginning. We will adapt, we will evolve, and we will try again.
The elevator door closes, shutting off the collapsing city. As we ascend, I look at my team. We're battered, exhausted, and forever changed by what we had experienced. But we're alive, and we're still human. Days later, after countless debriefings and medical examinations, I sit alone in my apartment, trying to make sense of it all. My body has returned to its full human state, but I can still feel the echo of the city's cautiousness in my mind. A constant, low-level hum that I suspect will never fully fade. There's a knock at my door. It's Rook, looking as impassive as ever. The higher-ups made a decision, she says. We're sealing off access to the city, permanently. I nod, having expected as much. It's the right call. We're not ready for that level of contact. Rook regarded me silently for a moment. There's something else. We're forming a new task force. Its mission will be to monitor for any signs that the city is attempting to reach the surface through other means. I understand immediately. You think it might try to infiltrate our world? After what you had reported, we would consider it a possibility. She pauses, then adds, We want you to lead the task force, Kai. The offer takes me by surprise. After everything that had happened, I had half expected to be relieved of duty, maybe even silenced to keep the city's existence a secret. Why me? I ask. Because you've seen what the city can do. You felt its influence and fought it off. If anyone could spot its handiwork, it's you. Rook's expression softens. But I won't lie to you, Kai. It's a huge responsibility, and it might be a lifelong commitment. The city is patient. It could be years or even decades before it makes another move. I thought about it, but the horrors we witnessed, the violation of having my very humanity nearly stripped away, part of me wants to run as far from this as possible, to try to forget it all. But then I remember the city's final words to me. The war is just beginning. If I walk away now, I might be leaving humanity defenseless against a threat it can't even comprehend. I'll do it, I say finally. Rook nods, looking unsurprised. Good. Report to headquarters tomorrow at 0800. We have a lot of work to do. After she leaves, I walk to my window and look out to the city skyline, the normal, human city I've known all my life. It all looks so fragile now, so unaware of the dangers lurking beneath the surface. I place my hand against the cool glass, and for just a moment, I swear I could feel gears shifting beneath my skin. A reminder of how close we came to losing everything, and of the vigil we must now keep. The city is out there, waiting, planning, evolving. And when it makes its next move, I'll be ready. It's not the future I ever imagined for myself. It's grim, it's dangerous, and it means I'll always be living on the edge between two worlds. But it's also vital, perhaps the most important job anyone would ever be tasked with. As I watch the sun set over the skyline, I make a silent vow. No matter how long it takes, no matter what I have to sacrifice, I will keep humanity safe from the city's influence. Because in the end, that's what makes us human. Our ability to choose our own path, to fight against the forces that would reshape us against our will. And for as long as I draw breath, I'll make sure we never lose that choice. The war may just be beginning, but for the first time since I first descended into the city's depths, I feel a glimmer of hope. We faced the impossible and survived. we could do it again. Whatever comes next, we'll face it together. Human, flawed, but unbroken.